How many of you have read Dandelion Through the Crack? Oh, thank you. And the Keel story. Oh, my. You should be excused. Thank you very much for coming. Before I do this, may I introduce those who went through this with me during the Depression. I'm not so young anymore, you know. You know that. I was delighted to see Sumiko Abe Iwamae, whose mother used to work in the strawberry fields right next to ours. And I see James Ogawa here, who lived down the road a mile, less than a mile from us, right? On a vineyard in the 1930s. And then I see my cousin Chio, with whom I played kick the can in the 1930s, and her family here. Just who else are familiar with those days? Hi, oh yes, Taguchis. Ah, yes, they were also our neighbors who had a 20-acre farm. And sadly, they lost their farm. Yes, Paul.
I was born in Sacramento in 1931.
Oh, now you're telling me. Yes, and we met at Shepherd Field in
Air Force
Base. We were both in the military. Yes. Interesting stories, all of you. Yes.
I am not but I am Mexican American.
Yes.
And I went through the Depression in Orange County, which made the first approach with Governor Warren.
Uh-huh.
Segregated the school. I went to the segregated school of San Ana.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm 86. And that's why I'm here, because I'm so interested in your history and other people's history, and I should write my own.
Exactly.
For mañana.
Exactly. You should write your own. There's a new book called The Farm Worker's Daughter that's been published. It's been interesting. I read that book. Thank you so much for your input. So, I was compelled to write this story. I felt like I really needed to do this now, because I heard from the young generation talking about the evacuation days and saying, you guys went like sheep to slaughter. You didn't do anything. You didn't hire a lawyer. Now, those of you who've been there know how impossible that was, right? I wouldn't be here talking to you if I had rioted or done something. But anyway, and so I felt this needed to be done, because I watched the Iseis, the first generation, our parents, go through these incredible experiences. Tom Brokaw wrote the book, The Great Generation. This was a remarkable generation. You know, you don't hear much about them. And they came through this, all these experiences of the alien land law, where you can buy land. There was the Oriental Exclusion Act, where in 1924, no one from Japan could come here. And there were anti-miscegenation law. You know that, where I couldn't, even in my day, I couldn't marry somebody who was of another race. Those of you who are older will know, remember those days. You had to go to Nevada to get married. I'm telling you my secrets. So those were difficult times, and the Iseis went through all these challenges so well, you know. And then the final challenge, big challenge, was when all of us had to be interned. I'm getting a little ahead of myself. Let me tell you about this book. When I was released from Poston Camp, I was asked to speak at churches and everywhere in Michigan, and I think that's where my interest was kept alive. And I took writing courses that night, and one of the teachers said, "This is an important story, you ought to write about it. I'll help you write it. Maybe she can ghostwrite it for me." Well, I didn't do that. I was in my 30s, I think. And then I hit my 40s, and then I hit my 50s, and I hit my 60s. I still haven't done anything. In the 70s, I hit 80, and I think, "You better get moving. You know, you're not going to last much longer." You know, so I started going to the donut shop every morning early, and over a cup of coffee and a couple of donut holes, I wrote a chapter or so, and finally got the manuscript done. But I want to tell you that this book is not my book. It's not my story. And I want to also tell you that my brothers and sisters, I have 8 brothers and sisters. And I went to each one of them. So they're part of this whole story. In fact, when one of my brothers died, I heard from a couple of people who never knew us, but through Dandelion Through the Crack, sending me a sympathy card. But it's become kind of a family. And so they told me what they remembered. In fact, I sat at the bar with my brother Steve, and over a couple of drinks, he would tell me things. He would talk, you know. And so that is also in my book. So it's a family thing. I have a great family, and so it's been wonderful to work on this. Now I might encourage you all to do the same thing. You know, and it's not just for. It's not just for your own satisfaction, but for your children to be able to read your own story. You know, I'm getting ahead of myself, but just jot down whatever comes to your mind, put it in a folder, and maybe when you're 80, you can write it. But anyway, so this book came to fruition. And I want to read to you a small section from the beginning of the book. And many of you will relate to this. How many of you were in one of the 10 camps? Wow, how many are there, Barry? Quite a few. Yes. 18. So, some of you might just relate to this. May 17, 1942, Sacramento, California. With a start, I noticed a police car following me. As I glanced in my rearview mirror, peering through the pile of old suitcases in the back seat, I quickly figured I must be at least 3 miles outside of my legal 5-mile radius. My hands begin to sweat. Remember those days? We couldn't travel over 5 miles. Will the cops take me to jail? What will they do with my suitcases? My brothers and sisters need them to pack up for the trip, in quotation mark. Quotation. If I don't get home by curfew time, remember we were under curfew, it had to be in by 8. What will Mama and Tochan, which means daddy in Japanese, do? At 18, I'm the oldest and the only one who drives besides Tochan. My brother Seiji is close to my age, but he volunteered for the U.S. Army after Pearl Harbor attack and is stationed at Fort Leonard Wood. What if the police think I'm a spy? Mr. Saiki, our neighbor, flashes through my mind. He is imprisoned somewhere, and his family doesn't know where he was taken. people say that there's a special prison in Missoula, Montana for spies. His son Nicky quit school to take over the farm. Nicky was only a few years older than I am. I'm going to skip over this. What had always been an unconscious... Oh, wait a minute, let me go here. I slow down, the police car slows down. My steering wheel becomes wet and slippery. He follows me steadily. That was scary. He kept on tailing me and tailing me to the town of Perkins, almost within the legal radius of 5 miles. I pass Bradshaw Road and he is still right behind me. I hold my body erect to keep from crumbling. My spine stiffens from fear. My foot can hardly control the pressure on the gas pedal, and I try hard not to jerk or spurt forward. Then I'll skip along. What had always been an unconscious right-hand turn takes every effort to turn my steering wheel and maneuver over the slopes of railroad tracks. She or my cousin remember those railroad tracks. It is not until after the descent that I notice that the police car is no longer in my rear view mirror. I let my car roll down the incline and my body goes limp. My leg is too weak to step on the brakes. When finally my Studebaker comes to a rolling halt, I fall over the steering wheel. It is a long while before I feel the flow of blood into my blanched hands and feet. I lift my head and see the chilling reminders down the road. Huge 18 by 24 public notices nailed onto the fence post. Instructions to all persons of Japanese ancestry. And some of you old enough will remember this. And you remember seeing these before you went to Yes? Uh-huh. All along Route Hill Road, there were maybe half a dozen of these signs, and I didn't want to stop my car and read it. I was one of them, and I should read those instructions. Let's see. I didn't want to stop when I first saw them. I didn't want the world to know that I am one of them and have them see me jump the ditch, hold on to the barbed wire fence while I read the instructions. The small print would seal my fate. I checked my rear view mirror for any oncoming cars. And I was supposed to do a couple more errands, but I was so shook up that all I did was go across the street and get some vegetables from the Chinese truck farm. I told him what had happened, and you know what he said to me? Next time if they stop you, you can call me. I come get you. I tell them you my daughter. He will never know how much it means to me to have someone who is not Japanese to stand up for me, especially when more and more Chinese are wearing I am Chinese buttons. Driving home, I feel that a bit of sun is shining through the threatening dark clouds. I don't tell my parents about the police. They've got enough to worry about. Now I feel as if I'm speaking to those who already know so much of my story. Young people have come up and said, you know, my parents never talked about this. Is that true? Yes, many of you. You didn't want to talk about it. It was just too painful. And so Asante came up this one time at my book signing and told me this, and I said, ask your questions now to your parents. And she said, they're both gone. I said, well, read my book and you may get some sense of your own history. And I hope that's what this book is doing to many people. Barry? Let's go on, get on with the show. I'm going to show you some slides. These slides came from the speaking that we do to high school and college students. We've been doing this with our VFW, VFW 8985 in Sacramento. I formed the Speakers Bureau over 20 years ago. And at one time, at our peak, we had 75 requests from schools in a 9-month period. This is a story that isn't being told in the schools. Very little in some. And so 15 of us started this, presenting the slides to the students and answering their questions. And now, that was when we were young, vigorous, in our 60s and 70s, and sadly now we are down to 3 still standing. But we keep on going because we feel that this is so important for young people to know. Lessons from our lifetime that we pass on to the next generation. Next. Many of you are familiar with this. I understand around here in Torrance you had strawberry fields. That's how I grew up, in the strawberry fields. I could probably tell you a whole lot about Chuck, what's on this picture. The bonnets and the gloves that she wore picking strawberries was made out of rice sacking. Remember the rice sacking? Yes, the rice sacking made everything, even little marble bags. So she made her own bonnets, etc.
Can I ask a question?
Yes, sir.
I love these parts. I just need to know, and I've read the book a couple times, about your father and when he came, and how that came out of Strawberry Farm came to happen. Could we do that now?
Sure. Thank you. Thank you, Barry. He keeps me on track. Yes. My father... Thank you. Thank you. In 1911, my father came at the age of 14 to the Napa Valley. And that's where he got so interested in the country. And he read everything. He read Longfellow. He read Wordsworth. He read Jefferson and Lincoln and all these. And in fact, when we were growing up, we had the big portraits of Lincoln and Washington in the bedroom. So he became very interested, and he decided that this is where he wanted to raise his family. His father didn't think that. His father wanted to make money and leave, which most of us, most of the immigrants do, you know. And so he and his brother, Chio's father, stayed and bought land. You'll see how they did that, because, you know, at that time you couldn't buy land. Read my book. I can't tell you all the details. And some of you will identify with these instances. Then, that's how we got started. We started farming and got into strawberries. By the way, I'm going to digress. How many of you are familiar with Oregon plum variety of strawberries? One, two, three, four. Wonderful. Those, the rest of you don't know what good strawberries are. Really, I'm a lookout. I'm looking. I went to the internet. I went everywhere and I'm asking everybody, how can I find this variety of strawberries? Oregon plum. The best tasting strawberries. You don't know what strawberries are until you've tasted that. It was, I lived right there, or we lived right there in the strawberry capital of the world, Florin, Mills, El Grove. And strawberries by the carloads were shipped to Washington and Oregon. They wouldn't ship to the east because these were delicate strawberries. And so now, then somebody comes up with a bright idea of making strawberries to ship. They taste terrible. Well, it might be good to you, but you know, those of us who've been there know what real strawberries are. Anyway, I could digress on that forever. Okay. Now, then, what's next, Barry?
Well, if you'll indulge me one more time.
Okay.
I want to point this out. You were born in your family's farmhouse.
Yes.
With a Japanese-American midwife.
Yes.
That your father had to drive to town and bring on out. And I swear you weren't more than 5 or 6 days old before your mother was taking you to the fields in a basket wrapped in rice packing.
Mm-hmm.
So she could pick strawberries and move you down the road.
Remember, anybody remember those days? Watch the East Saints work so hard, you know, taking care of their babies while working all the time, you know. And they didn't stay in bed for 21 days or whatever, you know. So.
And there's only one more thing I want to ask you.
Yeah.
School. One room school. I love it.
Let's see. How many of you went to Edwardsville School? Raise your hand. Did you go to the Unitarian school?
I know about it.
Oh, you're an Amada. Nice to know you. All right. Who else? James?
Haru?
Sheila? You went to the Unitarian school. You did? Yes. Because I was there with you. Yes. One room school house at the Belfry. Still standing. It's the oldest still functioning school. And we got the best education of our lives. I've gotten all kinds of degrees, but the best education was right there from first to eighth grade in that one room schoolhouse with Miss Cox. Dedicated teacher. She even taught us to sing opera. Yes.
I'm a sport if you are.
Okay, next. Remember this? The newspapers in those days were just terrible, terrible, terrible. And I didn't want to read them anymore. Go ahead. This gentleman was picked up by the FBI because he had his hobby of model airplanes. Can you imagine? Yes. And then they said anybody living around army and military installations were suspect. They had placed themselves years before in preparation for this attack. And we were right next to Mesa Field. So I come home one day and there are three agents in the house. One investigating the attic, and one in my parents' bedroom dumping out all those things. I think some of you remember that, how they just dumped out everything, looked under the mattresses, checked my drawers in my bedroom, and found my diary. I was 18 years old, and I was ready to go and grab it from him. And then I said, you better watch it. You better not do anything rash, because it'll get everybody in trouble. And so I sat down, gripped my teeth, and waited. The guys, when I mentioned this to the students, the guy said, that must have been a very interesting diary. Remember this. was all over the place. Those of you who lived through it will remember. Everywhere. Alrighty? Go ahead. Mm-hmm. Evacuation sale. And they were selling all your goods. Oh, you had to just leave everything. You didn't have time. We had 10 days to pack up a family of 9 that had been living there forever. In the dogs. Forever. And you had to choose. The East Atens had to choose what was important. All of a sudden, your farm wasn't important. Your equipment wasn't important. Nothing was important. The only important thing was Kodomo no tameni, for the sake of the children. That was foremost in their minds. Anything to keep the children, their family, safe. So he had to forget about all else. Without due process, yes, go ahead. Okay. What did you do with your dogs? Did you have dogs all over there? Anybody? You know? You had dogs? Just left them there. It was so sad. We had 2 dogs. Just ran around and around and around about us. They knew something was happening, and so we had to put them in the back shed and give them enough water and food, open the door a crack so later on they could get out. Can you imagine 120,000 people were taken away and their pets left behind? What did they do? The Yamasaki's dog found them in the streets of Chicago. Would you believe that? And got written up in Reader's Digest. I'm trying to find that article. Did we need all these guards? Can you imagine that many guards guarding me, you know? Oh, excuse me. I didn't mean to do that. Yeah, waiting for the train. Searches. Is that on my list? Billy? I'm trying to cut it short because this, I don't want to. Okay. So, everybody had to have a tag. Mine was 21617. My father was A, my father was B, and I was C, because I was the oldest. My little brother was K. Even babies in arms. Look at the stuff that she had to carry. You know, baby bottles probably, I don't know if she had baby bottles. What did mothers do with needing baby bottles? She had her toys. This is a famous photograph. How many have seen this photograph before? Quite a few of you, yes. Uh-huh. Now she is Yuki Llewellyn, who became a dean of university in Champaign, Illinois. But I like this photo because of the bedrolls. See, we were allowed what we could carry, each person, plus a bedroll. And my father hid inside each one of our bedrolls stuff that he thought we needed. Those of you who read my book will know what they were. But none of the thousands of students we've talked to ever guessed what was hidden inside those bedrolls. So somebody said, I would take my VCR. You know, it's so hard to help the students understand what it was like then. Yeah? Really, I'll tell you, my father hid a hammer, nails, saw, all kinds of carpenter tools, a gallon jug. Would you think of hiding a gallon jug? Everything that he hid was wholly necessary. And our room was kind of like a library lending place, you know. Everybody came to borrow the bucket, for instance. The bucket. What was impressive was that everybody, all the Isseis, remember, packed seeds. Would you pack seeds in a time like this? Of course, you could just hide it any place. Seeds, daikon seeds, cucumber seeds, you know, all this zinnia seeds even. Lots of zinnia started growing. Every bit of this was so totally necessary. You'll see what happened later on. No, you're going backwards. Go ahead. I remember so well getting on that dirty old train in Perkins, California. It was so filthy you couldn't see through the windows. But I just turned 19, and that's when my whole world fell apart. Until then, I thought, this couldn't be happening. This is unconstitutional. I was born here. I'm an American citizen. And so, when that train started to move, my whole world fell apart. I was so idealistic. And nobody said the president changed his mind, you know. And you can get off and go home. That's what I thought until the very last minute. But when that didn't happen, I cried and I cried and I cried. There were two people at the railroad tracks that were waving. There were lots of other workers there, but nobody. I think they were glad to get rid of us. But that was Miss Cox from Edward Kelly School with all the children that were left after we left. See, she had so many immigrant children of immigrant parents. And so only 13. So she had the 13 children come with her. And my piano teacher was there, Mrs. Fairman. Go ahead. I'm in there someplace. This was going through the Arizona desert like this, except we didn't have a canvas cover. Anybody was transported in those trucks? I know Chia was. You were. Where did you go?
We went to Manzanar.
You went to Manzanar. Yeah. We went to the desert, 17 miles into the desert, 127 degrees that day. The only time in my 86 years that I've ever fainted. And I fainted getting off that truck. And I don't know what happened the next 3 hours when we got to Poston, Arizona. Go ahead. My brother was in the service, but look what they did to him. They stripped him of his gun and gave him a mop and a bucket. How many of you are Nisei soldiers? Anybody? Yes. Oh, right. Yes. Where were you?
Oh, I was in Korea.
You were in Korea.
Stateside.
Korea. James. You were with the 442nd. Yes. Yes, exactly. Thank you. Thank you. Yes.
Korea.
Yes, I met you in camp. I mean, not camp. In Shepherd, yes. Somebody back there raised their hands. Where was he? So 47? MIS? Yes.
MIS?
That's another whole story that you need to get, Dana. Yes, 6,000 Niseis served with the MIS in the Pacific. Thank you. Remember this? They said, we're going to put you there for your protection. And I said, how come that machine gun is pointing right at me? That's how it was. Pineville Assembly Center, that's where we were taken. Stay 10 feet away from the fence, the warning fence. Yes, remember that. Uh-huh. And one grandfather went to retrieve a ball for his grandson and was shot. That was sad. How many of you were in Tule Lake? Interesting. Okay. How many in Manzanar? Oh, yes. 1, 2, 3, 4. Thank you. Poston. Well, by the way, Poston, those of you who are in Poston, I have the new flyers. If you want them, they're over there to take with you. It lists all the new flyers lists all the KIAs, Killed in Action, from Poston. Gila. Well, we're having every camp represented here today. How about Minidoka? Really? How about Topaz? All right. How about Heart Mountain, Wyoming? 1, 2. My, this is Amache, Colorado. By the way, did you people know that Amache, they say, was the best run camp? I once said it's the best camp, but none was the best camp. Of course, you know, none was. Okay. Roar, Arkansas. Really? How about Jerome? My goodness. 10 camps are all represented in this crowd. It's wonderful. Remember to jot down your notes and for your children. But now, you remember. Anybody with more, any family with 6 members or less had one room. That meant from here to here. Each barrack was divided into 4 to 8 sections. And we were a big family, so we had 2 rooms. And you remember, the latrine is up there, the laundry room is up there, and the shower room is up there. 250 people in each block. And the mess hall way out there, which fed 250 people 3 meals a day. Yes, sir.
I love this part. Who built Post-it?
I almost forgot to tell you. Did you know it was Bell Webb? That was his contract. Can you imagine what he's done so far? Bell Webb was my, yes, camp builder. Thank you, Barry. Any of you remember this? Sitting next, back to back and next to each other? When we go, I belong to a post with all men. So when we go out to speak, you know, they talk about this experience and they say that's how we became asshole buddies. I excuse them. Yeah. But, you know, if I were a contractor building that Obenjo, I would make the little holes for little children, wouldn't you? You knew men, women, and children were coming. None of them were. And this picture, a precious picture, is done by Jack Matsuoka. Remember Jack Matsuoka? He was a teenager, 16 years old. He was drawing everything he saw in camp. And then it's out in the paperback, published for the second reprint. It's called Poston Camp 2, Block 211. It's a great book. Okay. Well. Oops. I forget I'm wired. Flower show. Can you imagine flower show in the middle of the desert? I said, I've got to go see it. So I took my 3-year-old brother and went to way to the center of camp. And here's all this flower arrangements. And lots of flowers. And I said, how nice. Somebody sent us a carload of flowers for this event. Well, all the flowers are made out of paper. Can you imagine? And that's when my mother taught me how to make little carnations and little roses out of any kind of paper you could find. Scrap wood became everything. Remember? Some of you probably still have these birds. If you didn't have the tools, you made this, your own tools. This is a collection, and let's see that. Now, let me show you this. Tule Lake had lots of shells, so you had shell jewelry come out of Tule Lake. Up there is a ironwood trophy out of Poston. Way over there you have a sculpture from the swamplands of Jerome, Arkansas. And then everybody made these scrapwood, you know, file cabinet, any kind of drawers, whatever. You know, these baskets, I wonder if anybody could, they were made in Poston, Arizona by Mrs. Machida. Can you tell me what they are made of, those who have not read the books? Gee, that's the first time I've gotten that answer. That is clever, but it isn't. That is clever. Onion sack. Did you do that?
No, the elders.
You know, and there were onion sacks everywhere. Exactly. Somebody collected string, big balls of string, and made string baskets. See, so. It's amazing what people did out of nothing. One of the students said, "What do you do in the middle of the desert?" Well, the students, 15 and 16 years old, students, young boys, went into the desert and harvested rattlesnakes. Came home with a big sack of rattlesnakes, you know, stranded on a pole, and made all sorts of things out of the snake skin. They said that we were being fed rattlesnake meat, but I don't think so. Yeah. So. Imagine, somebody must have cut a board off of their wall. You can't find scrap wood like that. But look at the work of art. Seeds. Have you ever seen daikon seeds? Side daikon grow that big? This is Poston. Mr. Shigekuni is on the end there. Poston. Imagine, I've never seen such daikon radishes. What happened was they planted the seeds at the beginning. They said nothing is going to grow here, only sagebrush, and you know, that's all we saw. Nothing is going to grow here. Nevertheless, the Iseis went to the garbage and got these bigger cans. By the way, my mother got those bigger cans for chamber pot for Derek, for my little brother. But anyway, but with that, they watered and watered and watered constantly these little seeds that they planted between the barracks. And the thing grew. What a great day when you see something growing, you know, coming out, green out of the that arid, hot soil. Dana, you are looking at me like I should be stopping. Okay. All right, we'll go through quickly.
That was my look of captivation.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, thank you. Yes, I show this. See the barracks? This Frank Oster came home on furlough. This is what the BSA fellows did. That's what my brother did. Come home on furlough to an internment camp. Can you imagine, you know, you just sit around and talk and say goodbye. Then some of the guys never came back. Most of you probably are familiar with this, the 442nd Regimental Combat Team, known as the Purple Heart, the most highly decorated unit in service, and James was a part of that group. Anybody else from the 442nd here? Thank you. Let's see. Are we going on to that, or are we about done?
Well,
46. Let's get 46. These are in the military. Yeah, 46.
There's no numbers still.
Really?
No.
Oh, go ahead. Go ahead. Keep on going. Daniel Noe, he lost his arm at the 442nd.
Oh.
And we came back to Auburn, and this is what we found. Auburn, California. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Here. This is what Thurston looks like now. Can you imagine? That's my cousin Hannah holding a head of the humongous lettuce. This is on the Colorado River Indian Tribe Reservation. And the Indians, before we went there, the Indians and the people in that area had a big discussion. They said, we don't want Japs around here. It's not safe. They may go to the dam and blow it up. And a Native American said, well, maybe they can help us to grow things over here. I hear they're growing all kinds of things in California. Well, the last reunion that we went to, this Dr. Sosi stood up and said, we are so grateful to the Japanese who were here, incarcerated here. They're the ones who started to develop this country, area. And now we are involved in all of this farming. And he said, through your suffering, we've benefited, and thank you very much. It was a very emotional kind of a reunion. Next. That's my camp memory. I'm the chairperson of this committee that collected funds, and thanks for everybody's help. We were able to, the aging nieces who were in their 70s built this monument. This stands, I don't know how many feet high, 19 feet high or something. And it tells the story of the Japanese and the Indians at the base of that monument. And we have the job of keeping it up. Thank you very much. Remember, those of us who were there got this letter of apology from President Bush. This was dated 1990, when most of us were gone. Only 65,000 of us remained. And with that, you got a check for 20,000. I would take my 4 years of freedom instead of the 20,000 any time. Now, I'm going to close. Oh, it is time. Wait a minute. Now, so many people have said, when are you writing the sequel? I am writing only for my children. And what they choose to do, that's their business. So, now, I want to close with this haiku. I found my father's haiku poetry in a little steno pad after he died. And so my sister-in-law, Trudy Sauter, translated the haiku. and I have a haiku for each chapter. This is the final chapter. Well, before I go there, let me tell you, you know, coming back from camp was another difficult time. As you, many of you remember, we were given $25 in a one-way ticket to any place you wanted to go in America, in the United States. And these young kids did that, you know. It's amazing. They're a little old, well, my age or older. James will remember that. She'll remember that. You know, all these people. And it was starting all over again. The chapter is called With Only a Shovel Again, because everything at the farm was gone, and half of that property was gone too. But there were some trees still living, and my father worked on it and got them all alive again. I want to tell you one story. When now Taguchi's also lost their farm, and when I was released, I mean when I left college to come back, my home was Kingsville, Colorado, which was a sugar beet farm. Desolate place. I came to Denver and they said there's no bus going to Kingsburg. Nobody knew where it was even. Yeah. And I said, well, it was dark and I didn't know what to do. Then all of a sudden I remember Takeo Toguchi was in Denver and I said, he was our neighbor. And I called him, and he said, where are you? I said, I'm in Denver Station. I said, do you know where Kingsville, Colorado is? And he said, oh yeah, I've been there. I was so relieved. I was ready to sleep in that station all night long until morning, and then investigate. Then I can walk. But at that time, I couldn't. And so he says, I'll come and get you. I said, you have a car? Well, what he had done was leave Poston, get a job in Denver, and then call his family, find a place to live. Remember, getting $25 to do that, you know. And so many of the young Niseis did that. It's amazing. You know, we've been through three depressions. That was one of the worst depressions, where only with $25, you went and found a job, went and called your family, and saw that everybody was safe. It was a big job. It's amazing to me. I didn't have to do that. I just went to college, you know. But anyway, I wanted to tell you that story, and it's amazing. My father said, "Yoku yatta munda," you know. Can you understand that? You know? Yoku yatta munda. It's kind of surprised at himself for having been through this and made it with the whole family intact. Here's the one I love. Tanpopo ya iku hi fumarete kyō no hana. How many of you understand Japanese? Uh-huh. Tanpopo ya dandelion, you've been stepped on for how long? Today you bloom. Today you bloom. And I tell all of us, let's keep on blooming. Let's keep on jotting down your notes. Put them in your folder so that this will be something you will leave for your children. Now, life doesn't begin with your birth and end with your death. No. See, it's a continuity throughout the generations. And I hope that all of you will do that. Thank you very much.
Questions. Does anybody have any questions for presenting today? Okay.
I can shout.
Okay.
The diary that the FBI took, did they take it, or did you just get it back?
We were stuck. Okay. Yes, I got, in fact, that was interesting, to write my book, at least to have the dates there.
Yeah.
You know, what happened when. Wasn't much of a diary. But my father taught us to keep a nikki, in Japanese, a diary, you know. You all us children to do that.
Anything else? Any other questions?
Yes, I have one.
Yeah, but you're close to a mic, or
I'm
going to hand it over to you.
Oh, well, thank you. Actually, I wanted to find a way to work this in, because it's a great, it leads up to a great story. For one thing, it may be that you've won an enormous award for the book, the William Saroyan International Prize for Writing. That was a big thrill. But out of that, and this new title, came a chance for you to go to the Smithsonian Institution in February of this year. And that is planning to be on a tremendous panel on the day of, you know, remembrance. This is a big plus. But I wanted to get to this. There's a marvelous story about the letter. Will you tell that?
Oh, yes. First, let me tell you about the Smithsonian. They picked three books. And it was interesting what they picked. One was by a sensei called Famous Suicides of the Japanese Empire. What a title. It's a novel. And it takes in the story of the No-No Boys and of the 442nd and all that. And he develops this novel. Then the other was called Soldiers of Conscience. It's written by Dr. Shirley Castelnuovo, who did tremendous research. You know, I read that book and found so much information in it about the Nisei soldiers who were already in the service, you know, and the troubles that they had, the things that they had to go through. So, and then I was so delighted that they chose my book to tell the greater part of the story from common ordinary person like me, you know, and the common ordinary life that we all went through. So that was wonderful for me, but I was going to follow up on your question and I got sidetracked.
Yeah, was it that where you were there that you learned about the letter?
Yes, the letter. I got a call while there from the archives saying, would you stop by if you have time? So I stopped by, and you know what they showed me was a letter I had written in 1942-3 to Miss Cox. Remember Miss Cox of Edward Kelly School? I had written that letter. And how they got that letter was through this military intelligence officer who was investigating me to go to college. You know, it's just mind-boggling what they went through. Just this, I mean, this little citizen, that they suspected was not going to make it in the outside world. So they investigated me, and he came to Edward Kelly School, Dr. Gerald Lamboli, and gathered 60 letters from Edward Kelly School that we had written. And Chio, your family's letter is in there too. And so most of them were destroyed. So they kept these few. And so I said, I wonder who this Mr. Gerald Lamboli is. Excuse me. And so I said, I didn't think he would be still living. I mean, he was older than me. And so then, lo and behold, when I come home, I get a call from Mr. Gerald Lamboli, 94, smart, very alert, sharp as a tack, going to all these programs at the Smithsonian, going to the opera, doing all sorts of things. It was a delightful conversation. But he said, you people lived under those horrible conditions. Somebody should write about that. So I said, have you read my book? So life is an interesting journey, isn't it? Isn't it?
Do you have any other questions?
Yes.
Paul?
Okay. We met in Wichita Falls, Fairfield Air Force Base. And we were a nurse there in the hospital on the base.
Uh-huh.
And I had heard that you had volunteered. This is during the Korean War, and you had volunteered to go to Korea, and the story was that I heard you ended up in the Philippines, and is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell us where you went from there?
Mm-hmm. From the Philippines. Well, I met you in Texas. I got sent to the Philippines. All my friends were being sent to the Korean, the Pacific. Yeah, and so then, this is a strange thing that happened. I was at the officers' club, and this Colonel Rose said, are you having problems here in the Philippines? Because they didn't like anybody Japanese, as you remember, you know. I said, no, I'm learning Tagalog. And also had a wonderful day of spending time with a Filipino nurse, public health nurse. It's amazing what that little nurse did. She carried her bag. We climbed up the bamboo steps and took care of a little baby and gave shots to somebody else. She was amazing. I said, gosh, we nurses in America don't do anything that important, you know. But anyway, from there, so he said, would you like to be transferred to Japan? I said, sure. And so 10 days later, here comes this order saying you're sent to Shinkam Hospital in Japan. So that's how I got there. I just went on a trip as a flight nurse to Seoul and back. Never experienced such cold in all my life. The ground squeaked, you know, when you got off the plane. But anyway, so that's my experience. But let me tell you something before that. I volunteered because nursing schools weren't opening up for me. You know, they said, we cannot have you around the patients. We have this policy that we cannot have anyone of your background here in the school. And these letters came from Yale, from Johns Hopkins, from Western Reserve, three top schools of nursing where you had to have a degree before you enrolled. And so I gave up on that, and so when the recruiter came on campus, I volunteered, you know. And that recruiter looked at me, he says, just a minute, I got to call. So he had to call Washington. And then he said, we can't take you. See? So it was those days, you know. It was so difficult. The doors were just closed everywhere. Well, thank you for asking that, Paul.
Do we have any other questions? And I do encourage you to use the microphone because you have some folks that can't quite hear your questions. Anything else?
Is there somebody there?
Yeah.
No?
Oh, she wants to say thank you. You know what? What we can do is we'll wrap up. I'm sure there'll be time for some individual questions at the back. I do want to thank you and Barry for coming today. It was really, you know, a labor of love and appreciation, definitely on my part, for them coming down and spending the afternoon with us. And thanks to Heritage Stores and Carolyn for having both available. I hope you enjoyed today. Let's have one last round of applause for our presenters. Please pick up for a copy of the Heritage Film Lab. Let us know what you think. And we'll have our presenters at the back table. Is that okay?
Yeah. And there are flyers here for California Writers Club, if any of you are so inclined. My business cards are there, and also pamphlets regarding postal. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.